You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
I mean, the level of guest on this show just continues.
It even surprises me.
Oh my God. I mean, how low can we go? No, it continues to rise to such an impressive level.
We go and get the bowels of the internet. You know,
the dregs. The dregs of our own company.
Just go down and see if anyone's begging for change. And then there was this guy.
We bumped into this guy at the water cooler.
We said, is there a water cooler?
And we said, hey, buddy, we know you ain't got nothing going on.
Bruh, fam, you bored, right?
Come through.
You guys guilted me.
Yeah.
You played to my most sympathetic impulses.
Right.
And I showed up at what feels like a place where sometimes they shoot pornography.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sometimes. We mean right now. No. Ladies and gentlemen, the voice you're hearing is Pablo Torre, everybody.
What's good, Pablo?
It is a pleasure in all the ways to be here.
Oh,
sincerely.
Speaking of pleasure, back to that point. Okay.
I mean, I would say, you know, you said sometimes they film pornography here, but I would say sometimes they do a soccer podcast here, and the majority is pornography.
Yeah. Also explicit.
In right. I mean, our podcast is just us verbally filleting ourselves.
Same. Nobody, full disclosure,
nice.
Same.
Nice, very
just,
nice.
Pablo, I just want to make sure, nobody turn on a black light in this room.
Yeah, or Pablo Torre will find out.
Okay, we don't need that hard-hitting investigative journalism, okay? All we do is hard-hitting in here. No journalism. Anyway.
Yeah, speaking of it, for people who...
Sometimes soft hitting. Yeah. Sometimes. Okay.
It's tasteful. It's tasteful.
Everything hard hitting.
With consent, of course.
Let's talk about, because this brings up a good topic, your podcast, Pablo Torre Finds Out, also here on the Metal Arc Network. You're always taking people down, bro. You're always deep diving into stuff. Does it ever weigh on you, bro?
My conscience is just racked with guilt. What does Larsa Pippen think of it? It keeps me up at night.
Pablo Torre Finds Out has existed for just a couple months and has already developed so many enemies. How is it even possible?
He's got a lot of ops.
Yes. Vivek Ramaswamy is an enemy. Marcus Jordan is an enemy. Larsa Pippen, aforementioned, is an enemy. I think a lot of people who just aren't here for multi-syllable words also enemies.
Yes. Wait, is Marcus the one who owns the store in Orlando, the sneaker store? So damn.
Trophy room.
So you're not getting the trophy room Jordan 1s or
no,
whatever's coming up next?
By the way, the fact that you are aware of that is funny to me because I left that part out of the episode. If I can make another enemy out of Marcus Jordan again.
Are you going to talk about the backdooring?
Backdooring. Speaking of pornographic language. Yeah. The backdooring. I fell into a...
Lars is like, they're talking about me again!
But it's just the backdooring of like, so...
Do you know this story?
I don't know this story.
Okay, so you should
explain
it.
They got a very exclusive sneaker.
Okay.
Trophy Room is a store. But obviously, the kid of Michael Jordan's kid owns it.
Uh-huh. He has a plug, it turns out.
That's all right. So he gets to do a collab on a Jordan.
Okay.
It becomes one of the most highly sought after Jordans. And then, as this sometimes happened, let's say there was a Cooligan Jordan that was coming out, maybe one or two would find its way out the back door.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Or out of a truck, and then they'd be posted online.
Stock
be
like, triple X.
Yeah. Right? We're going to keep this going the whole episode. But in this case, I don't remember the number, but it was like hundreds of sneakers
allegedly
were found out. So backdooring is when you know someone at the company
gotcha.
That can give it to you. So you circumvent the auction or the lottery.
Yeah. So he was a villain in the world of sneaker reselling in ways that I did not appreciate as a reformed sneaker addict myself. I was reminded as to what it's like if Michael Jordan's son was also allegedly a scammer.
Yeah. And this pissed off so many people, and he still had to answer it to this day.
Yeah.
And I was shocked you didn't bring it up.
So, fair to criticize my journalism immediately. I understand this.
I was just shocked because it seems such like a comments, topic with so much.
The comment. So there was a lot that I had to leave out of that episode. And it is funny that, like, the episode in which we, for people who aren't familiar with my journalism, we did an episode about Marcus Jordan and Larsa Pippen falling in love. Mm-hmm. Just two crazy kids in a mixed up world.
You know from the names, though, it's two players. It's the former wife and the son, former wife of Scottie Pippen and the son of
Common meet yes. cute. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. It's Romeo and Juliet if it took place in another unreleased episode of The Last Dance. Right.
And if Juliet was a MILF.
But still had it.
Thank you. You guys could have been helpful on this episode. There are a lot of avenues.
You need consulting. We're always here.
I do love the fact that you're like, which way should we go with this? Let's talk about the MILF.
So they agreed to come on the show. They have a podcast. Shout out to their podcast, Separation Anxiety. Mm-hmm. I should plug their show. We listened to all of it, and we did like a deep textual analysis of it, in which we mostly laughed at its absurdity, and then we invited them to come on the show, and they agreed.
Yeah, which seemed very cordial. You guys,
So I thought it was cordial. I was of the impression that we gave them space and a wide berth to sort of discuss potentially a wide berth. Yeah, she wanted to have kids by him at some point. So all of that, I was like, great. This feels like a thing where I found out a lot that I didn't expect to know, like how there actually is a sincerity to their love. There is. Yeah. I'm not here to say
that. I believed it too, yeah.
Yeah, you listen to them and you're like, they are spending so much time together that if they were faking this, they are the greatest method actors 100%. On the planet.
At this point, early on, you're like, oh, come on. And now you're like, oh, all
right. Right. And so we met them, we got along, and then weeks later, I guess, there's a headline in the New York Post in which Larsa Pippen had called me miserable. Which I thought was, on some level deep inside, very cutting.
You thought she was spot on?
Yeah, I was like,
damn.
How are you in my conscience?
Damn.
But beyond that, I was like, oh, I thought I was going to be invited to the wedding.
Yeah.
Right.
And now it seems clear that I am, I'm shadow banned.
Right. Yeah. It was, I guess the context of it was that there was conversation after the interview was over that they didn't like.
We did a post-mortem in which we discussed what we learned.
Yeah.
And we, well, okay.
An epilogue.
But it was also like, and in the run-up to it, like what we did was we said, here's how we authentically feel about this.
Yeah.
Right.
It feels like Marcus Jordan to us, based on my own reporting and listening to the to their podcast, was somebody who was always trying to get the attention of his dad.
Yeah.
And this is not a surprise to anybody who's ever heard Michael Jordan say anything, right? That guy is not exactly somebody who is deeply invested maybe in the interior lives of his children. He went into the Hall of Fame and on the dais famously said that he didn't want to be his own kids because that seems hard.
Yeah. He also cooked the guy who beat him in high school.
Yes.
He was just, he invited the guy and cooked. I mean, this is a vicious human being.
Yes. So he kind of roasted his own kids, roasted his enemies who are, you know, specs relative to him. And then he also
flew them in to cook them.
He flew them in to the Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts. And then he also complained.
As if it couldn't get worse, it was in Massachusetts.
Correct. And he also complained about how they raised the ticket prices on him because he's Michael Jordan, and now he has to pay even more to get these people he hates in the audience for this thing. So anyhow, we
like
sort of
next level hater, dude.
Connected the psychoanalysis of like what it must be like to be Michael Jordan's kid and like why. Look, and we're not Dr. Freud, but we did attempt some amateur psychoanalysis of like, okay, so what's here for Marcus? What's here for Larsa? And certainly beyond attention, there's also just this notion of how can they be the main characters in a story that they never got to be anything more than a sort of like fleeting sidekick in? And this was their way. And they called me miserable because I pointed this out.
Exactly. You've been to therapy a couple times, and so they're like, "Oh, okay, no, we don't have to.
Don't make us go to therapy by virtue of you having to." Right.
I'm told parents are important in therapy.
You're weaponizing therapy speak. Yeah. That's what you're doing.
I am absolutely guilty of that. That is totally fair. So stolen valor, therapist stolen valor.
So look, a lot on the show. You know, like we said up top, we are. I can speak for myself. I don't know your age. I think we're fairly similar in age.
We both have very smooth,
brown
skin.
We're both just very young Asian people. People think I'm Asian. People think I'm Filipino all the time.
I was gonna say
I have Asian in me, right? Right now.
You can zoom in on me going.
No, this is the guy.
Get off the Pablo's lap. God damn.
For those who are just listening to this.
I'm using his microphone.
Christian and Alexis are saying
the problem is that you started the show with making a porn joke. And
now that's the game.
The next
the
45
episode.
Minutes, that will be
I
weaved
this,
in.
This is your
this.
Own unknowing.
I lubricated all of this.
Larsa was 100% right about that. I have some Asian heritage.
What do you got?
He doesn't.
What do you got?
It turns out my great-grandfather found this out when my grandmother was going through dementia. My great-grandfather, Chinese.
Whoa.
A lot of Chinese people in Cuba.
Love to find a secret about my ancestry through dementia.
Uh-huh. I found out my grandfather had a dog, and we're like, oh, we didn't know that. And he goes, yeah, we had to go to the doctor and take care of it. And we were like, oh, because he got sick? And my mom's like, no, he went to the doctor and got poisoned. To kill the dog. We were like, what? This is what you did in Cuba. When the dog got old, I'm like, this is why you don't share this.
It was a different time.
Yeah. Right. But take care of it. Like, it's mafia style taking care of it.
You put a hand out on your own dog?
You take care of it.
That's how I was raised. No loyalty, only money. I remember my grandfather in his deathbed saying, fuck bitches, get money. And I said, wow, I'm wearing like, I didn't even know you knew English. I'm part Chinese, a very small part, but
I love
I'm part
it.
Chinese. He's not. Everyone thinks this dude is
Asian. Hawaiian, yep. Filipino, yep. Polynesian. Yep. I get it all
the
time.
All of it.
It usually always depends what part of the country I'm in, where people guess sort of like what Asian they're type of used to seeing or whatever.
Yes.
But I've been such a huge fan of you, and it feels like weird because we're kind of in similar in age.
Yeah.
That where I feel like I grew up watching you. That I know it makes people feel old when you say
no,
that.
No, man.
He said it like it was accusatory. How dare you make me watch?
But I grew up with Around the Horn and PTI and just watching you on ESPN for so long that you feel like just having you at this table with us is just like,
crazy.
Oh, it's one of my cousins.
I
just
wish
came
I could
over.
Mute you.
Yes. I have long been. So I started doing TV on ESPN. I got hired at ESPN in 2012.
Yeah.
And it is 2020, fucking hell,
yeah.
2024. So for a dozen years, I have been ethnically confused as well other things on television. And what I've learned is people are like, why does this Chinese guy have a Mexican name and vice versa on Twitter and in the street sometimes.
Yeah.
What I've learned is that I think this table, all three of us, are just going to be what like all of planet Earth looks like in like 500 years.
Without yeah, 100%.
Going to get all mixed up together and it'll come out looking like this.
Or yeah.
For people who are.
I know, I confuse people. Like, if I go to a Spanish bodega, they're like, if I go to a Yemeni bodega, there's a lot of Yemeni bodegas by me, they'll be like, Habibi? When I walk in. And if I go to the Dominican spot, they're like, es un habibi. You know? Like, they're
always,
also not sure.
They're always certain it's habibi.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, get down. They're like, hey, hermano, oye, God. And then try to give me shots from behind the counter. It's a lot of fun, bodegas. But yeah, we're all kind of like ambiguous. No one knows
yes.
who we are. But a lot of people must just assume you're Latino.
Of course, all the time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help. I mean, my name is fucking Pablo Torre. Like, it's really hard for me to be, indignant
about
this.
You should
this.
Just carry, like, a pan de sal with you everywhere you go.
So here's the trick. Yeah, exactly. you just it doesn't help, though, when pan de sal is Filipino bread and, like, and it literally is Spanish.
Yeah.
So, like, Spanish nouns are all over Tagalog, which is the main dialect
of the
Philippines.
The days of the week are the same as in Spanish.
Yeah, forcas, tenedor, like, all of this shit.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help also that I took Spanish in high school and college. And so I can speak shitty Spanish.
Yeah.
And so I can begin to hold a conversation that I then find myself feeling like, Wile E. Coyote during, where I'm just like, I got, okay. Now we've reached the point where I'm about to fall into this canyon.
Yeah,
you're like, and I got
just,
nothing.
I just feel like at some point you just gotta. If someone says, "Are you Mexican?" You just be like, "See," yeah, and just own it for the rest
Look,
of that conversation.
We all have the same colonizer, so it bonds
us. That's right,
or whatever. But this is the thing I think why it always resonated just watching you on TV. There's a little bit of like. You know, I don't see many people in this space that look like that and are also not only, you know, not only just doing a great job at their job, but the nature of like around the horn, which is like inherently competitive.
Yeah.
Taking sports journalism and saying, all right, battle it out, folks. And
look, we're not nerds only. We also can compete.
We can also ruin democracy by inspiring competitive talk show arguments.
So I have a couple questions. Just the nature of like around the horn, because I love the point aspect, and who knows what points matter and who what the value of anything. But there must be some joy in winning, right? Yeah. And I don't know. Look, I'm not accusing anything. I don't think it's predetermined. I think it's all random.
Oh, you calling him WWE?
What are you
I'm
doing?
Just saying,
WWE ESPN.
I'm just saying. Is that the final segment when the winner gets there,
yes.
gets the podium, and gets yep. to speak?
FaceTime.
It feels. I'm like, how do they nail it so perfectly all the time? You know. So that's why, in my mind, I'm like. Is it, did they rehearse that? Is there a teleprompter?
Are there like three people with ending monologues that they don't get to use?
Right. That's right. So you don't have to give the game away if that's the case.
No. It's something that we all take pride in, I think, because the thing we hate the most as people who do that show is when we gotta retape something because somebody fucked up.
Okay.
Because it is taped, but it's live to tape.
Yeah.
And so the premise of like what we're really, as much as it is, And to be clear, I am winning for me. I'm winning for the ability to have 30 seconds unencumbered that I can just say whatever, I mean, within reason.
Yeah.
Whatever I want.
Thank God you didn't become a comedian. I get to talk by myself. Every show would be an hour whether you sign up for it or not.
It is, straight up.
Tony giving you the reality, giving you the light.
Yeah. Just deeply masturbatory in all of those ways. But in this case, it's also just the pressure of, We have a clean sheet, you know? We're like, we're like, no mistakes, we're rolling, like, don't mess this up for everybody else.
Right. Yeah.
And so I think the pressure comes from that.
Gotcha.
Of like, I don't want to be the guy who's forcing everybody to stay late today because he could not articulate his take on why Japanese toilets are superior in the allotted 30 seconds.
They really are.
They really are. I went to Japan a couple years ago in 2019, and I mean, just the... Everything about the experience of going into
a lot of buttons.
A lot of buttons.
You don't think there's gonna be buttons. There's buttons.
There are so many buttons.
Yeah.
It sings to you.
Yeah.
Some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the plastic cladding is like, am I allowed to sit on this? Is it gonna eat me if I sit on this thing?
And it's warm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got it. So I this is a real FaceTime I gave, but I got a Japanese toilet seat, like a bidet attachment at home. Shout out to Toto. I am still holding out for a sponsorship. I do want that Asian in that area. And it's look, I have a couple of basic theories about how I spend my own hard-earned money from sports gas bagging.
Right.
The things that I use the most, my couch that I sit on every day. I got a nice couch. This toilet, man, it just makes my life easier and better. And I just want to appeal directly. What cameras? All the cameras. get a stream of water shot into your butt. And thank me later.
I think that's the clip. That's the clip we got.
Yeah,
from
with
the show.
Zero context. Everything else.
Stand by it.
By the way, Taku Sando, an incredible sandwich shop in Greenpoint, has a Japanese toilet in their
bathroom.
So
the restaurants that have this, I could not be more impressed.
It's a Japanese spot. They make the milk bread themselves. It's absolutely incredible. I walk in the bathroom. I said, "Oh, they did the whole thing." They went the extra mile.
Right. They cut off the crust.
Yeah.
And they put those different pressures.
Yes.
Just as you like them.
I can't understand what any of the buttons on there. I got to use Google Translate.
It is dangerous.
Yeah.
Sometimes you sort of like
press the wrong button, and it's like, oh, this is the ladies' button.
Yeah.
And it's like,
I'm being sprayed in the wrong area.
And yet I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. But you know what? Could have also used a little cleaning.
Okay. So who's the winner?
I don't know what to do with this tampon it just shot at me, but the rest of it, I'm okay with.
You use it
is this the dumbest show you've ever done? No, as someone who graduated from Harvard?
This is squarely inside of my interests, honestly. Perfect. So,
you use the word gas bagging.
Yeah.
And when you were just speaking there, it's obviously a Levitard on brand for the Levitard and Friends Network. We've done Levitard shows.
You were chastised as a...
I remember, as a listener and I think a fill-in host, when you guys joined the show, Dan's show, and when I was listening to it, how has that been?
Okay, this is great. Let's air it out, all right?
Please.
Because this has been a topic of conversation with a couple people at Metalock, because some people listened to it. Some people were in the room when it happened.
Some people were complicit.
So we've done Levitard Show twice, one when you were guest hosting and one when Dan was there. And we were talking about Women's World Cup and all the kind of controversy with the U.S. Women's National Team. And when
To give some background, I think we were both very excited to be on the show. With Dan.
It is an honor.
For multiple reasons. I think just career-wise, it was important for Christian and I, but also Cuban-American. Christian was very excited. When Christian gets excited, you could see it. You could feel it.
Bro, he's also kind of our boss.
Yeah,
without a doubt.
Yeah, a little bit.
So
a little bit.
Yeah. I didn't realize I was walking into a performance review. Yeah. I thought I was just there to talk about soccer and stuff. But the term gas bag came up. I go on this long-winded speech or diatribe.
You were yipping on that episode, to be honest.
But because Dan threw out the question about, it's essentially like the U.S. Women's National Team kind of riling up people and getting people upset by...
To give some context, he asked the question. You started talking... Dan walked off set and then came back and you were still answering.
but it was a serious issue because, Rapinoe was getting criticized and all that stuff.
Layers
and,
to that.
And then his response after he walked back in from...
While you're talking.
From the bidet that he just used.
the Japanese toilet that keeps just on camera.
You would think it would be calmer.
God bless that specific bidet.
He's just holding a tampon like, what am I supposed to do with these? I got to figure out these buttons.
And then he said, oh, Christian, you're kind of a gas bag.
No, he goes, Alexis, what's it like working with this gas bag?
I mean.
Which is even more disrespectful to aim it at me.
I'm just on a Zoom call trying to have a good time.
And Pablo, you may remember this. I stood on business, bro.
Right.
I stood 10 toes and defended my homie.
Let's go. Yep. How'd that go?
I don't care if it's your boss or not. Nobody disrespects my podcast co-host.
But you, as someone who is also called the gas bag.
Yes.
I guess, how do you handle it?
That is a show. We can say this now. Enough time has passed. We can be truthful about what it's really like to go on Dan's show. They're bullies.
There it is.
So no, but in a way that part of it's just weird. So I see it all through the lens of me explaining to my mom, okay, so I'm going to give up Disney healthcare to work for the man who made fun of the fact that my wedding had a black tie dress code before it happened that he was invited to. And it was like, this asshole? I remember the first...
What was he upset that you didn't write flat brims optional? What was he upset about?
Of all people judging how people dress.
Yeah. Good God.
He said, do not serve this man. It was a generic picture of a guy dressed like a skateboarder.
Yeah. Right.
Dan was very offended.
There's just someone dropping an Amex black card at a Miami
wearing
tchotchke store.
Wearing the finest bowling shirt.
Yeah. The V-neck bowling shirt. Where'd you find it, Dan?
Dan is dressing better lately because I think he has now been bullied sufficiently,
as
a result of being who he is. I remember the first time I ever went on, I think it was, I was working at ESPN, the magazine. Dan was at ESPN hosting the show, still at the mothership. And I was doing a profile of Canelo Alvarez for ESPN, the magazine. Mm-hmm. And it was the Floyd Canelo fight. And so another writer had Floyd Mayweather. And I had Canelo. And we were going to do for the magazine these two sort of alternate covers. And so we were on assignment together covering two different camps. And Dan decided to have us both on simultaneously. And he was alternating between us, me and Tim Kuhn, who's a great writer, really good writer for ESPN the magazine. And Tim his question for both of us was like, give me the five most interesting things in your story.
Damn.
And Tim, I'll remind you, is covering Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah.
I'm covering Canelo.
Yeah.
We've established I don't really speak Spanish. Right. He doesn't really like speaking in general. And so Tim is coming at, he's coming at the show with all of these great stories and nuggets. And I got nothing. And I realized, oh,
you're like,
Dan,
he's a redhead.
Yeah. Did you know that they're a redhead in Mexico?
Yeah. Next question.
I said that five times. But I was there to be put in the dunk tank. And I was just like, oh, that's what this show is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not being set up to succeed. He is testing me.
We're fodder.
Yeah. Yes, we are merely toys for him.
Yeah.
And so I decided to work for that guy. Yeah. Is the spoiler alert end of that story.
Because now you can never be asked a question like that again.
That's right.
You're on the show.
That's right.
As opposed to a guest.
Yeah, it was, look, I wasn't, after we were done recording, we chatted about it and we kind of laughed it off.
It's a rite of, I mean, in all seriousness, it is a rite of passage. I would say that everybody that I am friends with who does that show or has ever done that show, we all have a story in which we sound like the worst version of ourselves because we are trying to impress Dan and a show that is mostly there to just fuck with us.
Right. Yeah.
You never realize how imposing it is to have, what I think, 35 guest hosts or co-hosts until they flip the camera there and each of them have something they want to make fun of you about. You're like, what is this scenario? It's the exact opposite of a pep rally. Whatever the exact opposite of a pep rally is that. I was like, good God, there's so many people waiting to shit on us.
It is weird because you go into it being like, you know, man, I've watched Dan, for the last 15, yes. 20 years.
Yeah, I look
and
up to
like,
him.
And I'm like, bro, this guy, Cuban, he's also from up here. I'm like, oh, right. This is, when there's not that many Cuban Americans, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a cakewalk. And it was no cake.
There was no cake. There was no cake, sir.
No.
There was no cakewalk.
We ran out of cake. Here's some jellied eel.
And this is the main thing. Look, it's an honor, obviously, getting to be a part of Meadowlark Media and work in this space. And look, dream come true for us, right?
Absolutely.
The fascinating thing is that we are comedians who love soccer. You walk into, you say the word soccer in that room, everybody's like, okay, what's, all right, no, I don't know. Stugatz is just going to be, he shuts
even
off
Mike
the headphones.
Even Mike Ryan Ruiz pretends he doesn't know the sport. When he's like, I don't want to be the only one.
Mike Ruiz is a diehard soccer supporter.
Absolutely.
And fan. So I do want to talk about soccer a little bit and your connection to the sport.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, working at ESPN, I imagine you've been coerced into having to cover this
Absolutely.
Sport from time to time.
Absolutely.
And you know, it must be difficult and challenging.
I can see the pain in your eyes when we bring up the word soccer.
It was a really hard time.
In general, yeah, what's
real?
Your connection to the sport?
So it starts when, I played soccer on the weekends at like a little Manhattan Kickers.
Yeah.
So I was there. I was there playing terribly. I remember having braces and getting a ball kicked into my mouth and having my lips and my mouth fuse with my braces.
Wow.
And I was like, this sport is
usually
not for
when
me.
When you said braces, I'm like, oh, he scored two goals in a game.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
No.
I had braces that psychologically damaged me. So there is that as my most vivid, visceral.
Did you ever ask, like, are there any Filipino legends in the game? And realize, no.
It seemed pretty clear.
Yeah.
It seemed, I didn't even need to look it up. It seemed pretty clear that there weren't. But when I was at ESPN, I should say, my favorite video game of all time is FIFA.
Mm. Right.
And I say that not because I, like, nerd out on, like, oh, man, like, I love using my favorite player. Like, I love inhabiting his body. It's not that.
Right.
It's just that I find it, it's the best, it's really the best video game to get, like, lightly stoned and play. It's meditative. It's like ping pong, weirdly,
yes,
just
sir.
Constant motion. You get into, like, a flow state. It's the best. And multiplayer with friends is the best. So that was my pretext for the assignment I got. It was the Brazil World Cup. And I went to Brazil for 5 weeks and covered the World Cup. And
incredible.
I wrote columns, and I was there for a long time, solo in the era when I could just tell my then girlfriend, now wife, like, I'm gonna be in Brazil for a long time, and she was like, this is a weird job.
And you're like, no, it's the World Cup, I swear. You could Google it this time. This time you could Google it.
Definitely.
Were you based in Rio or?
I covered, I mean, they had me flying literally every 2 to 3 days. So I went to Manaus, went to the Amazon.
That was
Amazon.
The one in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
That's a bus depot now. Did you know that?
That tracks.
Yeah.
I went to, and I was booking hotels myself, which I think I was not supposed to do, but I was like on like Expedia or whatever, like booking Brazilian hotels in Manaus and Brasilia and Rio and all these places. But Manaus, I remember I booked a hotel and I was like, let me see what's on the grounds of this hotel. And I walk behind the hotel and there's just a cage with a jaguar in it. And like no one else is around. And I'm like, I should probably just not be the only person here next to this.
You sure you weren't at the Qatar World Cup?
You sure you weren't in a Saudi prince's estate?
It was an amazing time though. It really was. It was one of the, I mean, I'd never been on assignment like that. And my main mandate was not to like provide soccer analysis. It was to like write columns about the scene and the characters. And so in that way, like it was for like, clearly, like it was, my columns were meant to be for like the American audience. And so I wrote like 20 something columns and just churned out shit. And it was, I embedded with like a bunch of like England fans as they were, so these are all people, these characters that you guys know intuitively. It's like, oh, they're like this.
Yeah.
Like, I did not realize, like, oh, you guys, like, this whole singing thing is real.
Oh, yeah.
This whole dressing up as a knight and just, like, celebrating the sadomasochism of what it's like to be the place where football is never coming home. I'm just like, yes, now I get this. This is a great story. So just finding stuff like that. I mean, it was a total delight, and I retained zero soccer knowledge on the back end.
I was going to say, it seemed like you really kind of got a chance to understand the sport.
I was immersed, and I wish I could say that I had more, like, analytical expertise as a result of watching that much soccer. But no.
Busy hanging out with drunk Brits.
Absolutely. And, like, trying to figure out, is that Rihanna? And it was at the final. I was like, yo. Yeah, I sat next to a guy. This is, speaking of the Hispanic, Latino diaspora, I sat next to a dude at the World Cup final who worked for ESPN Brazil, okay? His name was Pablo Torres.
Love it.
Whoa.
And we only realized this like maybe like a quarter of the way in.
Yeah.
And it was just like, what are the odds?
Yeah, man.
Statistically, it turns out a lot higher than I realized.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's like a billion of both of you, bro.
There's a player in that place.
His name was also John Smith. Believe that?
Who plays for Girona now, I believe.
Yes.
Pablo Torre.
Pablo, yeah.
Oh, Torre.
So, that's an episode that I am working on.
Okay.
To be a little coy about it. Because I don't know how I feel about him.
Okay. I guess we're going to find out.
I can't wait to see this.
That's right.
The doing that job, you know, us as, you know, I guess experts in the game, even though, you know, some people may not consider us.
I consider you guys experts.
Thank
you. In a very unironic, sincere way.
No, we are deeply embedded in the game. And it is, you know, just like some journalists are watching a couple different sports a day, certain game, like the NFL playoffs, I'm like, if I might catch 6-7 minutes of it, I'm like, oh, I see Jason Kelce taking off his shirt. I'm like, okay, let me tune in. I guess something's going on over there. But with soccer, it is always on. I'm always looking. The FotMob app is always open. I'm like, what game is going on? Always paying attention to it.
My wife is like, another game? It's just constantly
Yeah, the sport does not stop. It's always being played somewhere in the world. So the way I think a lot of American soccer fans get frustrated, I mean, maybe the people who are like the experts, I guess, I'm sure there's another word for expert, but the people who are deeply embedded in the game, when they see journalism from the perspective of like, let's show Americans what's happening here. We get a little bit like, we feel it's like, aren't we above this? Can we move forward in treating us with like kid gloves? And let's talk about the sport in a very, maybe it doesn't have to be exactly the way it is in Europe, but I think that's my question. It's like, is it fun to do that kind of work of like, to talk to the American audience like they're children, so to speak?
Yeah, no, it's I feel you. I mean, there's a I think there's probably a parallel to like to, you know, to music in that way, where it's like, ah, this thing I love, which I feel like is successful, irrespective of whether you mainstream, whether the MSM, whether the elite media cares that that this band is super popular globally. You know, like the fact that you're describing the conflict of, I want people to treat us as legitimate on our own. We don't want to be condescended to, but we also want to be included.
Right.
And I think that is, that's hard. That's hard. I mean, look, the reality of like general sports talk television is it's a mile wide and an inch deep, right? So you're covering a million things and it's meant to sort of It's meant to. it's a weird fetish, man.
It's specific, and there's dozens of us.
But yeah, but there's a certain like unavoidable shallowness to it, and then what you just hope in general is that you don't embarrass yourself, and it turns out that is harder than it seems sometimes.
Don't I know that from this weekend?
Yes, I mean, so this is a. I wanted to bring this up and just get your response. I'm sure you've addressed this. Have addressed this. But this is a very out of context clip that I'm going to play of pardon the interruption, yes, on ESPNU and, I mean, the legendary Tony Kornheiser discussing Messi, Lionel Messi playing in Major League Soccer. And
when I think soccer, I don't think Tony Kornheiser.
And look, I'm not going to play it, but before this moment, Tony Kornheiser is very adamantly saying he is not a soccer guy. He is not interested. He's also annoyed by people who really love the sport.
He is. Kornheiser is extraordinary, and I respect this, and we should all do this. I should do more of it. He's just very transparent about like what he likes and dislikes and what he knows and doesn't know. And me, in this clip, which is, I can see in the runtime, way too short to do me justice.
And that's why we chose it, why we chose
very this. Good. It's revenge, your executive revenge on Le Batard, on me, I get it.
Well, listen to this, you gas man.
So here's this is just a 5-second moment, but everybody will understand what's going on when you hear it.
Because Leo Messi has done this everywhere. He did this in the Premier League.
And there it is. We don't need to play the whole clip.
So here is what happens after this, is that I Wile E. Coyote myself, and I realize, oh, not true. And so what I said was, of course, like, in the Champions League. I mentioned the Champions League explicitly.
Yes.
He's gone to these buildings and beaten these teams.
He definitely humiliated Premier League clubs.
Yes. And again, when I say that I like fucking saw Messi play at the World Cup final, and I realize now that like the other time I saw Messi, I was eating chicken fingers, so not the greatest defense of me. But the point is, before you bring up that shit,
you missed a pretty famous goal.
The point is, I knew what I was doing. I play FIFA. It's not like. So we can just get into this.
Yeah. This is when Messi finally arrives.
So I went to go see Leo Messi. So I was like, I was in Miami, Mike Ryan, of course, like Inter Miami booster, mm-hmm, allows me to sit with him field level. Mm-hmm. And just for people who don't understand what it's like, I've never been to this building. It feels like a temporary, almost like temporary World Cup in Brazil kind of building, where it's like, this is, someone was apologetic on the way and they were like, this is not what it's going to be like forever. Yeah, like,
when
like,
all right, cool. When are we taking the scaffolding down? No, that is the building.
Yeah. So I walk in and I am surprised, given this description on the front end, that they have an excellent spread, food-wise.
Oh, okay.
I'm starving. I had just gotten off work. And so I guess what you'll play here is what happens after I decide to.
Which I'm sure all of our fans and listeners and viewers know. But I mean, what an absolute movie.
This is Messi. The game against Cruz Azul, right? Just to confirm.
Yes.
Do you remember this game?
Okay. This was, I believe, the home opener? Or his home debut.
Yeah, so the game against Cruz Azul.
And you think to yourself, imagine Messi scores a goal in his home debut. And he just so happens to do it. We're going to show this.
So, okay.
And then we'll see what you were doing in that.
So this,
the combination of this movie
the free kick. It was unbelievable. It was a great moment, and it was an incredible start to
Beckham
Messi's
cry.
MLS career.
Beckham cry.
The whole Beckham family was in tears. Everybody couldn't believe what they saw, and this is the moment after the goal was scored.
So you can see the smoke and stuff.
Yeah, everyone's celebrating.
Pablo's.
You can see there are like clips in which you see me burst out from that like eating area because it's like a sweet thing. And so a sweet, both terms valid here. I throw the door open because I was watching this happen, literally holding a plate of chicken fingers, watching this through the glass. Now, you'll forgive me because while I'm not a soccer expert, my math, and again, I'm not great at statistics as the Pablo Torres example shows, maybe, but I was like, the safest time to get some chicken fingers is at the very beginning of the game. Mm-hmm. Like, what are the odds? What are the odds that the very first thing he does in his home debut is this tremendous goal that turns out to be, I guess, historic in this sense?
I do want to correct you, though. There are no stoppages in soccer, so I would say there's one halftime, obviously. I would say the safest time is before the game starts.
Okay, see, that's that.
Not when Messi is lining up to take one of the most single iconic
Listen, what you don't know is how good those chicken fingers are. Okay. And the good news for me was that there were more goals that day.
Yes.
And I saw those. And I also had more chicken fingers.
I was going to say, there were also more chicken fingers. There we go.
So it is a, it's a great moment captured, and Chris Cody captured
it. It was ironic to be captured by Chris Cody as I was being the most like Chris Cody I had ever been.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like truly like fun, like that meme of a dad like carrying a bunch of like plates and stuff and like a vacuum cleaner. That was me with chicken fingers.
Also, just to say, like when I found out, when I saw this clip, I was like, no, I get it. Chicken fingers over a goal. You can see goals any day of the week.
I mean, they must have been good because, I mean, I'm trying to think of when it comes to stadium food. We've been to a lot of stadiums, and some of the soccer stadiums have some pretty good spreads.
Hospitality spreads are pretty great.
I mean, the first one that comes to mind, and I've never been there for an NFL game, but Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Atlanta United matches. What I mean, the best I think I've been around. I think
you got a Chick-fil-A in there too.
They do.
Not open during NFL games because they're on Sundays.
Yeah, because of the bigotry.
Okay, they could just get past that little part.
Are you at least willing to meet us halfway?
So the
we'll concuss them. Does that make it okay?
What was it? Minnesota United had a pretty
Good spread. We've seen LAFC's suites
LAFC's
are pretty great.
Are pretty good. Okay. Yeah. All right. I want a couple other things.
Let's talk about like the world of sports television.
Sure.
You still do work with ESPN.
Yes, right? I do Around the Horn and PTI still on a freelance basis. I show up every week and put myself at risk of being memed by asshole soccer fans.
Yeah.
All right.
You're talking to two of them right here, baby.
We run those accounts.
Anything for the clicks. Follow us at Pablo Torres Sucks.
Oh, God. People still get in my mentions about that, by the way.
Really?
About the Premier League thing?
Yeah. And I'm like, look, I get it, of course. What's saddest to me is that my only move is to be the sad person who's responding like, there's more content.
Yeah,
like,
there's more to it.
Yeah, I mentioned the Champions League.
For us, soccer brings a level of joy and community that that's why I love basketball. I'm a big Knicks fan, but it never provided the community that I think. You know, I'm an NYCFC. We're both NYCFC fans. That provided that. It's just something that's very, very different. Is there any, like, if we can't make you a diehard soccer fan, what is the thing that brings out that diehard soccer fandom in you?
When Asian people do stuff.
Let's go.
Just any Asian doing anything.
Manny Pacquiao was that for me.
Yeah,
like, talk
really?
About, I mentioned before, like, speaking of problematic people in terms of just like their beliefs about homophobia, who I'm just like, Never mind that. This chicken sandwich is awesome.
Yeah, like,
Manny Pacquiao.
Bro, this dude's taking a lot of punches to the head. Can we just...
It's unfortunate that he was literally elected senator. Yeah. And so it became even more. I was like, come on.
Didn't he also release like a ballads album?
Oh, yeah. So I covered him. So the first story I ever did for Sports Illustrated was a Manny Pacquiao profile. It was the first real magazine feature I ever wrote because I was like, yo, I think this guy is good. And I know that because I feel my body like electrify.
Yeah.
I cry when they sing the national anthem before his fights and he goes and beats up a Mexican dude.
Yeah.
The executioner, by the way. It's not a random like.
Right.
Literally.
Yeah.
He was
racist.
It wasn't racist. He was concussing those Mexicans consensually.
You're like, I cried. I felt it. I felt so passionate when he beat up Mexican dudes. He meant because he had to fight so many Mexican guys.
In the ring, not at the border.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just clarify.
Although, if you've heard some of his thoughts, I don't think you'd be opposed to going to the border and doing it again.
Oh, my God. But and likewise, by the way, when he got knocked out by Marquez and he became a meme, I was like, this doesn't feel good.
Right.
But so that was, though, as I mentioned before, like what I didn't feel in soccer playing FIFA. I did feel like, oh, this is my avatar.
Yeah.
You know, like I felt like he represented me. It was emotional, and he did in all the genetic and ancestral ways. But that has just blossomed into pretty much anybody I can find trace amounts of Asian in.
Okay.
Are you just watching the Jabberwockies dance? Like
Filipinos. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Beneath those masks is this face.
Yeah.
Just
all of them.
All of them.
Bro, growing up, I used to go to a lot of Filipino parties, and I'm like, y'all sure you're not Jamaican, bro? There's some of this dancing. It was basement parties. We sweating.
Yes.
It was crazy.
So okay.
Every dad would rip the door off their daughter's bedroom. This was a common thing. Every young woman in a Filipino house I grew up going to had beads or a curtain for a door because the dad was pissed off they had a boyfriend and would rip the door off the hinges. Dude.
My daughter's 4, but that door is getting unhinged.
You're practicing?
Yeah, absolutely. But to your point about like the Filipino rituals at a party, like when I profiled Manny Pacquiao, I was embedded in his entourage. Truly, I was like blended in as a Filipino dude among literally 40 Filipino dudes.
Yeah.
And covering boxing, by the way, is the best because because they don't care. You'll go to like a party at their hotel room and it's just like, oh, the journalist is here. Whatever.
Yeah.
I get punched in the head professionally.
Yeah. Don't hide the drugs, dude.
No, it's for real. Like just like, there's a bar. We're going to set up a bar at the... It felt like almost famous to me. I was like, oh, this is how I got hooked into sports writing as this calling was. I get to do this and I get to like be in these rooms. And so anyway, so part of what happened was Manny Pacquiao would just sing karaoke all of the time.
It's not what you expect.
And so he has a terrible voice.
Yeah.
But he is Filipino and so he loves it.
He has a number one album, no?
Yeah, he has so much success as a recording artist that has nothing
sing.
To do with his actual ability to sing. So the other thing I did, because Filipinos love several things, unhinging the doors of their daughters, karaoke, and basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Basketball, I mean, Filipinos, we love basketball, despite the fact that basketball does not love us, right? So
he does not compliment the...
As a matter of fact, like in the Filipino basketball, the Philippine Basketball Association, there are rules around like number of imports. And I believe there used to be, I have to check if it still is in place, of like a height requirement almost of like, because we're not, again, statistically speaking, it's not friendly to us, this game.
Right.
However, Manny Pacquiao loves it. And I recommend that all of us at some point just revisit footage that's on YouTube of Manny Pacquiao shooting a jumper because it's a catapult. It's incredible.
He's just punching the ball.
But I say this because in the course of doing this reporting, and I covered him, and I covered his later Mayweather-Pacquiao fight for ESPN as well, as part of an entourage embedded member, I played pickup with Manny and, again, upwards of 40 other Filipino dudes. And these games...
Wait,
these
did
games,
he play in the Filipino Basketball Association?
I can't tell if this is an exhibition...
Let me just mute it so we can just look at the highlights.
As a side note, like one of the teams is Blackwater, and I'm like, I don't know if that's the military contractor.
Yeah. The Derby Scale?
Or that'd be a very weird sponsor to have. But that's Manny Pacquiao shooting a three.
It looks like if your four-year-old daughter threw something.
Yes. A four-year-old daughter whose door is now beads. Yeah. If she was asked to shoot a three, it would look like Manny Pacquiao shooting a three.
It went in.
But this is like basically Obama playing basketball.
So worse than that.
Okay. No, Obama, his shot kind of went.
No, I'm saying as far as how people defend against him.
Yeah, so that was my point, actually, was that when I played pickup with him, it was actually like playing hockey with Vladimir Putin. It was like, he's going to score a million goals, and all of us are going to nod like it's actually.
Or being in an uncle killing contest with Kim Jong-un. You're just going to let him win, you know?
Okay. I mean, my man, he got moves. He
has, but he's, by the way, one of the greatest athletes of all time. The greatest Cavs, I would argue, in sports history.
Oh, I mean, Manny Pacquiao. That's high praise coming from someone like you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But this dude is also a dictator at times, ideologically, and in terms of how he is defended.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he lost the ball there, and that guy's
Seen again.
He's not seeing his family.
Okay, shout
out
to
Manny. I don't know why I started talking about. Oh, it's who I root for. Right. It was Pacquiao. Was I think the most. I haven't had a eugenicist, I haven't had a full-blooded Filipino. I'm really captured my heart in that way since, and I'm hopeful.
Okay. Did you get a chance to see the Filipino women's national team during the Women's World Cup?
Yes.
Because they had
an incredible story.
A historic run
in terms of accomplishment and also an amazing story in terms of how that team was assembled.
Right.
A lot of American college students.
Yeah. And again, this is the trick of like, I mentioned the diaspora and all that stuff, but like, what do you do when you're the Philippines and you're starving? Like, the Philippines love sports, obviously. So what do you do when you're starving for athletic success, but also in order to get that success, you need to be creative in terms of who's on your roster. So like the Philippine basketball national team, like Andre Blatch was on the team, former Washington Wizards center, who is a very sad person to elevate your national program. He's not Filipino at all, but they passed legislation to make him a naturalized citizen.
Right.
So anyway, in the world of soccer, I was like, oh, I know how this works. Mm-hmm. But what was my, there's a great story, I think on Yahoo, Yahoo Sports, about how it was assembled. I was jealous of this story. I didn't know about it. It's a couple dudes just like literally posting on message boards, like combing the bios of to your point, college soccer teams in America, and truly being like, I see a trace amount of Filipino in that person.
Yeah.
And then reaching out and finding out that, some of them, they are containing those trace amounts and they would love to play in the Olympics. And that's how that team came together, and it was fucking wild.
Yeah,
for the World Cup. It was wild.
Yeah.
So, kind of awesome.
Look, similar to the Premier League gaffe, you know what I mean, this guy? but I recommend, I don't know if you have heard, Between Two Worlds is the podcast from Meg Reyes.
Yes.
And so if people...
she also covered this. It's a really great
story. It's an amazing
great story.
Podcast series about it. So I like hearing that. I mean, I think everybody gets into the sport in their own way. And a lot of times, it's why we have World Cups to begin with. It is the display of the sport. It's how you get new fans. Most, especially American fans, are always like, I got into soccer because of the 2008 World Cup or the 2012. And there was a player they liked. And then they ended up getting, hooked.
Beckerman radicalized me.
Right.
People often say that. I mean, those dreads.
Those dreads.
I wrote a story about Kyle Beckerman's dreads, if you couldn't tell. I was like, that guy, man.
So, Jesus.
Well, they really put you on some wild assignments. Go to Manus. Yeah. Talk about a white guy with dreads.
Well,
we're really gonna get a lot of soccer fans this way.
Pablo, we have to wrap up. But I mean, we have so much to discuss. Hopefully, we might have one time for a game of FIFA. I don't know.
Oh maybe man, not. You beat me as Street Fighter at the holiday party.
Yeah, which is why I wore this shirt.
I noticed. Sonic boomed my ass, unfortunately.
I got this shirt of Guile. But
yeah. I would like to exact my revenge at some point.
Okay.
When I don't have to go to work.
Yeah.
So for our oppressive
we'll invite you
boss.
Back and we'll get some a game of FIFA in so you can try to get your revenge.
So I can play as Leo Messi and not make that mistake ever again.
Dude, Pablo, everybody, just go check out Pablo Torre Finds
Imagine
Out.
Imagine your team scores a goal while you're getting chicken fingers. Wouldn't that be hilarious?
I'm going to bring chicken fingers and play against you.
I'm
going
to hold them behind you the whole time. Come on, dude.
That is my fetish.
All right.
Personally.
Well, you know what this show's about. Pleasing our guests.
Go follow at Pablo Finds Out on all socials. On X, Twitter, and Instagram. And go do that. Follow Pablo Torre.
It's a great show.
Everywhere as well.
Yeah, inhale my gas.
Yeah, it's great work. We had Dave Sampson in recently, and it was great. And it was Skipper. We got to get Skipper on here as well because
Skipper,
I love
John Skipper. Authentically love like so my on my team at work. Like Ryan Cortez is now a Tottenham. He's been radicalized over the pandemic. My brother, by the way, also like I'm surrounded by people who just like love Tottenham now.
Ugh,
John Skipper is one of those people, but he goes way back, and so like he's a very busy man, former most powerful person in the world of sports, ran the most profitable media business in the history of media. He will walk by a screen playing a Tottenham game and just stop and watch.
That's how we get him in here.
So honestly, we got to set a series of laptops.
TV on a fishing pole, just playing Tottenham highlights from the 80s.
That's right. We did get to meet Skipper with
Grant Wall.
Grant Wall, yes. The late Grant Wall. He invited us to what's the bar?
Smithfield.
Yep. Smithfield. And we would watch games, and that's where we met Skipper. But watching the episodes with Skipper and Sampson are literally one of the most informative shows about sports.
I can't get enough
Sporting
of
Class.
It.
Yeah.
It's absolutely remarkable.
I love doing that with them. They are both deeply, actually intimately knowledgeable about things. Like it's to me, as I said on the show once before, it's like rich guy only fans. Right? I'm like, tell me what it's like when you're buying $1 billion contract.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little yin and yang between them. And you know, and then you have to be the sort of
one knows how to say it in public and the other one could care less. And I love them both.
But it's a great dynamic. Sporting Class. But no, thank you guys. This has been legitimately like super fun for me.
Thank you.
Glad to exercise some demons that may or may not still be in my mentions.
All right. Well, it's about to go up.
Maybe there'll be some kind ones too. So everybody, be nice to Pablo.
Love a kind demon.
The soccer community. Yeah. Pablo Torre, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Everybody, follow us at Soccer Cooligans on all social channels. Be kind to us as well.
Subscribe.
That'd be great.
They deserve it.
Hit the subscribe button. Share the podcast. Tell your friends. We all love Pablo, so let people know. Hey, Pablo was on the Cooligans in what might be a pornography studio. So we'll see what happens.
Also, Marcus, if you see us in your store in Orlando, don't hold it against us.
Okay, join the Patreon for the exclusive Pablo content that you really want to see. All right, we'll be back soon, everybody.
Love you guys.
Now's the time to start your next adventure behind the wheel of an exciting new Toyota hybrid. With the largest lineup of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and electrified vehicles to choose from, Toyota has the one for you. Every new Toyota hybrid comes with Toyota Care 2-year complimentary scheduled maintenance, an exclusive hybrid battery warranty, and Toyota's legendary quality and reliability. Visit your local Toyota dealer today. Toyota, let's go places. See your local Toyota dealer for hybrid battery warranty details.